You're listening to the Modern Producer Podcast, expert talk on livestock housing and animal husbandry. Get ready for today's episode.
Hey guys, this is Tim Kerbis, your host for the Modern Producer Podcast. We're glad you decided to join us today because we have a great discussion, which I'm sure you'll enjoy. Our discussions lately have taken a turn away from barns and equipment in some ways. We've been fortunate enough over the years to meet fascinating people, both from within our industry and from other walks of life. Invariably, when we take the time to engage, discuss, and most importantly, listen, it turns out even us opinionated guys at New Standard can learn something. This podcast was one of those times for us. With a dynamic company and some new people coming on board in our Manitoba offices, our discussion couldn't have come at a better time for us personally. I won't spoil it for you, but I do want to take this opportunity to acknowledge all the great people we work with, our colleagues from every aspect of our work, whether it's customers, suppliers, or industry partners, are truly the greatest asset we have, and we are better for knowing each one of them. With that said, and without further blather on my part, let's get into today's podcast and let someone else do most of the talking. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to today's edition of the Modern Producer Podcast. We're just having some fun trying to get some technical issues worked out, so I'm not sure if we're going to edit in that front end or not. But today we have a couple others on here with us. We're going to be discussing a little bit about employees and interview, hiring, onboarding, and building a culture within a team inside a company. Most of this is coming from actually a blog that one of our guests today, Janae Metzger, is it? I got that right. Helped us write about a year and a half ago. I also have my brother Kevin calling in from our Manitoba office. It's kind of good timing for Kevin as we just brought a new employee on board yesterday. Kevin, you better be taking notes.
One this month, one last month. So it's good timing.
Yes. So Janae, why don't we just get right into it? I'll get you to actually introduce yourself to whoever might be listening and kind of explain your role at Pig Hill where you work.
Absolutely. So as you said, my name is Janae Metzger. I'm from Northwest Iowa, work on my family farm there. And my role is specifically to employee recruitment and development. I like to call my employees my team members because I am one of them. So I do anything from the actual advertising to interviewing, and then we do multiple interviews, but I'll be a part of all of that, and then reference checks. So I do all that upwork, and then once they're actually hired and accepting a job, from there I take them and actually do all that onboarding. So my role is very specific to making sure that we have the right people and that they have a smooth and successful transition to our farm, to our team, and then hopefully a successful career path with us also.
Sure. So do you do any specific roles related to pigs, or are you just good at all of it and can train everybody in the barn?
So I started, when I came back to the farm, I started the farm up. So because I had the opportunity to actually do the whole everything, anything that is on that farm, I have done. So because I have that experience behind me, I can do the actual training, because there isn't anything I don't know how to do. So it helps that whenever anyone's brought on, no matter where their role is within the farm, I can jump right in. And each and every day I'm on the farm, I mean, of the 7 days, I'm there 6 out of 7 days, some days it's 7 out of 7. So I am working with them. So if I'm not doing actually onboarding or training, I am working right alongside the team every single day.
Okay. Now, we're actually, and on our podcast, this isn't that critical, but we're recording a little bit later than we planned today because you did have to fill in. So obviously you're also an on-call person when someone calls in sick or something.
Like yeah. That. So I would also play a supervisory role at the South Farm also. I have a farm manager and someone who I'm working on training into assistant manager. And so through that, I'm just understanding what I got to do now to continue to coach and train and Yeah, whenever someone's gone, I have someone on vacation and I have a flex person, but the next time someone else comes in sick or whatever, it's comes on me. So sure. It's my farm. I want to make it run. And so I'm always willing to do what I can.
Gotcha. So why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown of how you go through the hiring, what you do to seek out the people, how you pre-qualify them before you even go through some of your initial call-ins for interviews or reaching out to them. How do you go about that process?
Absolutely. Well, I actually learned a lot from experience. So when I'll just back up a little bit and say that when I was hired on, I was hired to be the assistant manager of the farm. And part of my task was not only to do that, but also to hire the other 10 people who needed to come work for us to run this farm with me. So I had zero HR training. I went to school for animal science because I love pigs. And when you come back and you start a farm, you have to also love people. So it just kind of, through experience, I've learned a lot. So where I'm at today is I learn where I advertise. Indeed would be a really good location. Indeed and Facebook. So
Indeed, like the online
website. Yeah, the online website. Yeah.
So there's other options out there other than Indeed. Is that just the one you find that is, not that we're plugging Indeed, but.
Yeah, maybe they could be a sponsor here for you.
Might have to reach out to them for sponsorship. Is that the one that you find is most effective then?
That's the one I found to be most effective. Yeah, I've tried Craigslist, newspaper, flyers, pull-off sheets, colleges.
Have you tried online resources?
I've tried ZipRecruiter. That seems to be more management and like way higher level. Okay. There's job boards like Ag Careers and Pork. There's a Pork one. And it's a matter of how much money do you want to spend.
Sure.
And so when my budget isn't huge, it's nice to be consistent on one platform versus running to different platforms. So
and you find that the people you're seeking out are in that platform.
Yes.
So let's back up a second, I guess. Give us a little background on the farm itself. For those who aren't familiar with Pig Hill, give us a little rundown of the size of the farm, how it came to be, and roughly, you know, the age and all that sort of stuff.
So the farm construction started in 2015, and we actually started the actual production of the farm in August. We received our first animals, started breeding in November.
Still in 15.
In 2015, yep. Yeah. And then when we were in full production, by February of 16, we were a 2,200 head sow farm, is what we considered ourselves. And that next year, so that summer of 16 into 17, we went and doubled that farm right away. So as we are today, it's a 4,000 head unit, 4,400, depending on where you're counting inventory.
Yes.
But it's that would be the overall farm inventory. But the farm itself is actually an open pen, large open pen gestation farm. And so it's just a little bit different compared to probably what most people in the industry are used to.
Sure.
But that's where we're at today as far as farm dynamics.
And what's your current employee count right now? How many people actually work on your team?
We'd have 20. Okay. 20 full-time members.
Which would be a little bit high.
Yep.
For a 4,400?
Yes, it would. Two of them are night farrowers.
Okay.
So that would bring the day count to 18. I would be considered probably one of them. So if you take myself out of that picture, that would be 17. And we actually have two on-site nurseries. So we have 4,800 head nursery space in our farm.
Right. So it takes
and so because
time.
Of that, yeah, we have, that's a 2/3 employee, easy. That so that's why the number seems so high. I get that reaction a lot of, well, that's a lot of people. And it's like, yeah, it is. But I found that that's pretty successful for us to run our day smoothly.
So you run night farrowing. You mentioned your reaction to actually, when did you start that and how did that work out for you? Obviously you're doing it, so you believe in it.
Yeah. The farm we had previous to this, we did a batch farrowing. And so through that experience where we farrowed 170 sows in 5 days, we ran a lot of part-time help. And then we actually had a night shift there also. And it's just been part of our philosophy of raising pigs that you can pay for that position really quick and justify that just in your stillborn percentage, your preemie mortality and different factors.
Okay.
We're strong believers of that.
Sure. Back to the I'm jumping around here a bit, but back to the hiring process. So you've sought out on Indeed or Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, so when you've actually found somebody or somebody applies, how do you start filtering through and deciding who's even worth reaching out to?
Yeah. So because of the farm dynamics, the fact that it has a lot of technology with the NeedApp system, and I actually require that all applications go through our website. So right there is filter
great
number
filter.
One.
filter.
So many people think I'm crazy, but if they can't go to our website and fill out an application, they surely can't run Velos to know how to, you know, run our animal program. Yeah. So if they can't take that level. So that's step one. So step one is being able to get to a website and fill out the application.
That's actually probably a very good filter right at the front end.
Yeah, it has. And there's many people who seem to be offended that I won't give out paper applications, but just knowing the level of technology you understanding you need to have, that's been,
or even just a comfort level around computers. You don't have to know everything, but you should know how to navigate a website.
Absolutely. we use a lot of computer power and technology within our farm, so that's for sure required. So we send everyone there. So that's level number one. Number two, I go through the application itself and just make sure it's complete. Does it look legitimate? Do they have an actual address? Do they have a true contact? You know, is there contact information there? Because I need to reach them and tell them I received the application. Then I even go to references. What kind of references have they listed for me? Are they friends and family? Is it coworkers? Is it supervisors and managers? Depending on who they list would tell me a bit about who they are. And I'm not saying I won't interview anyone if they... Well, they have to have references, otherwise I won't interview. But if they have friends and family as references, it doesn't mean I won't interview them, but it definitely lessens their chance to get an offer, because the higher quality references you have, the higher quality candidate you are.
You're giving away secrets now, so your filters won't work so well.
I'll just not have any secrets, because it's one of those things that, because we're so... we need labor everywhere, that people are willing to give up some of these standards. And I've learned that if I do, my culture and just the level of integrity of which our team is decreases. And I'm not willing to negotiate that right now. So I'd rather go short staffed and not have the right person on my team than just hire anybody to fill a position.
So that probably does bring up the next thing Kevin and I had been talking about earlier. You're hiring more for who the person is, not what they're capable of.
That is correct. I didn't say anything about skills when I look at an application. So I do like to know their work experience. Are there gaps in their work experience? What kind of work experience do they have? Those things interest me, but it's not a requirement at all. I can teach people skills. I can't teach people values. And so that's my biggest thing about hiring, is it comes down to values.
Mm-hmm. I think, Kevin, you had a good line earlier, and we had said when we were doing the mic checks, let's not have our podcast before we're recording, but you had this good line, is that you can't be the parent and rebuild a person.
No, I started that years ago in my interviewing process, and I made that quite clear to every applicant, was don't try to sell me on all the great things you can do. I'm really not interested. What I'm more interested in is sit down for a while and get to know who you are, because I can't change that anymore. I can teach you what you need to know about my business and our industry, and most likely you don't know any of it anyway, so that becomes irrelevant. It's what kind of person are you? You need to fit in. The term you've been using here constantly is as far as team rather than employees. And that it's a very different mentality, even in that terminology, that, yeah, this person has to come join this family business, join the team and fit in. And if they can't do that, I don't care how skilled they are, they're not going to be a good fit. So it is, it has been a shift in my mentality as well, and a good one, that, yeah, I'm hiring for character. I'm hiring for who you are. it was your parents' job to turn you out in that. I'm not working at that anymore. I got my own kids that I got to work on that. I can't do that as well during the day with my employees. So
completely probably a sidebar topic. I heard somebody say one time, or maybe it was you, Kevin, I'm not raising kids. I'm raising adults. They just happen to be kids right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm keeping that. Yeah, the thing is, if you go in with the mentality of raising kids, guess what you end up with? Really big kids. So, yeah, I'm trying to raise adults. I currently have kids, but I'm raising adults. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. Someone asked me recently what I do. I said, well, I raise pigs, but I also raise a lot of people. So.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So getting further along in the interview process, you filtered them out through various methods. Now you get time to, you're actually going to do the interview. Is it kind of the same along the lines of what Kevin had talked about? It's more, would you be willing to have this person over for dinner in the evening, or is it the kind of person that you just don't really even want to be around? How do you start sorting that out?
So I've gone to multiple interviews now instead of just one, because one, people can put on a good show, maybe, if you want to say, and they can have pretty scripted answers. Yeah, for the first one. And so I do the initial one, and then I'm just really upfront, and I say, we have multiple interviews here. This is the first one of many, and this is more get to know you. And so I'll do the initial get to know you interview, ask some questions, answer some of their questions, because you know they're going to have some, and not give them any promises or any projections. Just say, this is step one. And then step two is call the references. And if there's any flags between the interview or the reference check, I just don't proceed. But if I feel good about what the interviewee says versus, and also what the reference says, they align, then from there I'll offer a second interview. And that's usually conducted by somebody else. And I may be...
You get a second read.
Yeah, I may be in the room, and it'll be more behavioral type questions and more questions on character and situational based things like that versus who you are and what you've done.
Okay. So you get through all of that. Like, at what point do you just say, okay, now we make the offer? Like, is there a grading system, or do you just, is it a kind of a gut feeling at some point that you say, we're going to go ahead?
Yeah, at some point it's a gut feeling just based on experience of what you said. But if you feel I'm more of a thinker, but like if the answers and the person, the first interview checks out well, the references check out well, the third interview is like everything's in alignment. We'll do a farm tour as kind of our last step, especially those who don't have the skills. And you want them to understand what they're getting into before they commit. Because I want this to be something that, okay, we've gone through, we've been talking now for a couple weeks. You need to give your employer a notice, and you also need to know what you're getting into before that notice is given. Sure. So come to the farm, see what we're all about, meet the team, ask them questions, talk to the manager or some of the other lead folks, and if that all goes well, it also gives me a chance to ask my team questions like, oh, hey, what'd you think? Or do you have a conversation? And yeah. So then, and if everything is in alignment and there's no major red flags or, the gut feels good, then at that point it's an offer.
Nobody's perfect though. There's always, I assume that there's always, okay, we're not entirely, maybe there's a little, not so much a flag, but maybe they don't quite fit what we expected or wanted. So what's a red flag versus what's just we'll have to maybe retrain them or train or work that out of them?
The red flags come down to our values, and which is part of our culture. So we have four core values: team, trust, attitude, and results. Seems very simple, but if anything within the reference check and or the interview seems to flag in one of those areas, so say they're not necessarily a team player, or they're maybe a bit dramatic, maybe they cause some conflict within the workplace, or
that doesn't happen.
No. if there's some situations like that at work that have been unresolved, if they have continually left each workplace on a bad note, so to say, like I've had multiple applications that say, oh, don't call my boss, or don't do that. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm also not going to hire you either, because thanks for being clear and upfront with me.
I won't need to call your boss, trust me.
Yeah. So that's more where the red flags come in, is it's on those values that we've established.
So Now you've hired them. What do you do to get them completely on board and fully functioning as a team member?
Some of it's formalities with your new hire paperwork, with your, you know, your payroll forms and things like that. Then another part of it is safety training. So doing some safety videos, understanding a lot of the repetitive tasks that are at the farm, whether that's power washing, movement of animals, vaccinations, some things like that, where there could be high risk for injury, slips, trips and falls. We have slippery floors. So we review some of that. We also go through our employee handbook. So that's not a 32-page document for no reason. I go through that with every person individually. We go over our core values. We go over different policies we have. We run through kind of a typical day. And then we actually have an online training course that we subscribe to. It's called Pork Avenue. And it's a subscription that we pay for our team because it's worth the investment in the fact that it's all skills based. So if I'm hiring on those values and they don't necessarily come with that background experience, we spend some time working through those videos and then actually going out into the barn and start applying that. So it's not all an office day because that gets boring and you got to get people through the initial shock and overwhelm. So you got to go out to the barn, work with them for a couple days, and then we come back and review with some training.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I just, kind of jumped over what Janae had said as far as, you know, blending, making sure it's not just all an office day and then getting them exposed past that, but following it through going, okay, they do the online training, then you get them to apply and you come back. Do you find that most people can actually absorb stuff, be it out of a manual, be it out of the online training? Can they absorb it properly without actually them taking them almost immediately and going applying it? Like I just find that for special skills and be that working with animals or something from our business specifically, if it's working with electronics, things don't fully sink in and register till people have their fingers dirty actually on the job. I'm just wondering if you're finding the same thing with those type of skills.
Yeah, that's correct. And so part of the onboarding, there's always a day one check-in. So, okay, tell me about the day. What were you surprised about? Things like that. And then for those first 2 weeks, they're actually paired up. And sometimes it's three. They're paired up with another team member where they're going to be, you know, shadowing or in that department. And they don't go on their own and for those first 2 weeks, just so that there is confidence that either myself or another team member is working with them, that they can, like you said, get their hands dirty, figure out what's actually going on, and then they can start to absorb like, okay, this makes sense, or here's that skill you were talking about. Now, it registers, and then we'll go review that video. So, and we don't watch 17 videos that first day. It's probably five. Three of them are focused on safety and the other two are focused on barn tasks. And we just start with the basics. So, you know, it's going to be animal care. So it's identifying your sick animals or what does a healthy animal look like versus not. And so we just start with the basics. And then that's what we focus on for 2 to 2 weeks. And then we start on another skill and we focus on that for a couple of weeks and then we go there. And so when you hire somebody, you don't just, it's just not, you know, get off running here. It's a 6 to 8 week process till you really feel like they understand. And I'd say it takes probably 3 months for someone to truly feel like they wake up every day. They know what they're accountable for. They know where they're going and what they're doing. It definitely takes time.
So even just working and all that, obviously there's things that will arise, problems, maybe something that didn't quite, that made it past your interview process. Sometimes you must run into some sort of conflict, some sort of problems. How do you approach that? How do you address that?
You have a conversation. So it's all about hard conversations. If you have a question, you just ask. Part of it is like, for instance, I have an individual about, what are they, 90 days in? So we need to have a 90-day review. But before they even got there, we were struggling with some attendance. And I said, you know, I'm pretty lenient about this. Not, you know, generally it's not an issue, but this is all stacked up to be quite a significant amount of hours. We need to start having a conversation about PTO. Well, you have to have that conversation. You can't just let it eat on you and just be like, oh my goodness, they can't ever make their attendance and it's so frustrating and I'm just going to fire them. Like, well, that's not the right way to go about it, right? So we'll have a conversation about it. I had a situation where I had two individuals that were a little bit chatty, and it was causing some just awkward feelings amongst the team about different conversations they were having. And you just sit them down and say, hey, this is the perspective that that other team is having. Can you watch the conversations you're having and, you know, keep it clean and whatever it looks like. So when, yeah, if there are issues that come about or that seem to get past you,
get on it right away.
Absolutely.
Have that conversation.
Yeah.
Do you find for the most part that the response to that approach addresses it and it's dealt with, or is it tend to, or do you run into some problems where it creates hard feelings that can't be worked past?
No, most times there's not hard feelings. Most times I have people who appreciate what the conversation, it's all about your approach too, but they say, oh, wow, I've never had an employer who actually like cares or whatever. Cause sometimes it's just personal things that are going on in their life, and you have to actually care about that to know how it's affecting the work. Because let's just be honest, all those things come to work with them, even though you'd like them to stay at the doorway, they don't. So when someone's feeling down, or you see someone's like, just maybe it's lacking motivation or excitement that they've maybe had in the last couple of weeks, just have a conversation. Hey, what's going on? I noticed this, and anything I can do to help you.
That would probably lead right into the role the DISC profile plays in your team. And if, for those who aren't familiar with the DISC profile, DISC, you can find it online fairly easy. If it's a great, pretty comprehensive, I would say, analysis of people's different strengths and weaknesses, but why don't you explain it a bit, Janae?
Yeah, so the DISC profile is something that I have everyone do. That's part of our onboarding also, is they complete this profile. It's about 50 to 70 questions, and based on how they answer will determine where their letter is amongst that wheel. You got to really have the visual and understand what DISC is to understand this concept. But based on their placement within the DISC wheel, it really tells me more about their personality and the way to approach them. Mm-hmm. Some stressors, some motivators, different things. So, for instance, a D is generally all about the results.
Like your cousin who's way off the chart,
yeah,
on your wall there?
Absolutely. I have some D in me also, so I understand. But when you do that, you talk about the results and the performance side of things. This is pretty general, but your I individual is more about your team. They're your influential. And so when you want to talk to them about a problem or have a or even give them like a attaboy, talk to them about the team, how it affected the team. Good, bad, or otherwise. Your S is a lot more of the supportive. They likewise are thinking about, so the I thinks about how have I affected the team? The S is about how can I help the team? So the I person is thinking like, I do all of this for the team. And the S thinks, I don't know if that makes sense. The S is the other way. Like, how can I lift up the team, so to say? And the I carries the team, maybe. The S lifts up the team. And the C is a lot more about your details. And so
the guy who's taking notes and slowing everybody else down because he wants the details covered.
Yes. And so I had, you know, when I have guys that tell me, well, if you want quality work, I need more time to get it done. Those are words of a C individual, totally a C. I mean, and so you know that when that's their complaint and their stressor, you have to understand how to work with that individual. And sometimes it even helps to even say, okay, this individual is also of that same category, and this is how they've overcome it. So then you have conversations amongst your team and say, hey, talk about your challenge. How have you overcome it?
So I'll just, I've seen the DISC, that DISC chart you have on the wall there. It's actually kind of cool because not only do you guys use it, I'm sure the team members use it to work together and understand each other. Once you sit down and have that conversation, I'm sure you probably do that even as a team, talk about the DISC profile, they can start understanding my approach to that person might be the cause of this potential conflict just because of the way I'm approaching them. The problem isn't the subject matter, it's my approach.
That's totally true. Yeah. I mean, it's about, 3% of the things we say actually matters. The rest of it is all about our tone and our body language and our physical aura. So that's correct. Not only for a manager, how do I lead my people better, but also within solving conflict within the team. That is a huge talking point for me, because then I can say, okay, this D individual is just bugging the heck out of this CS individual. And it's like, okay, this is just all about just natural personality. It's not about the person. So let's take the person away from it and let's talk about the personalities here and how can we work together towards this.
Sure. So that goes a long ways to, I'm sure, building a team, building the culture in the barn. What else do you guys do to make a cohesive group of people, both genders working side by side, people from different walks of life and backgrounds, different nationalities even? How do you get them to coalesce?
That's a great question. We do a couple things. One, we have different tournaments within the farm. We have a foosball table, and so we do different foosball tournaments within the farm, just getting different teams together. That's been a ton of fun getting after on our lunch break, we, have 15, 20 minutes. We'll all get together and we have teams. And
correct me if I'm wrong. You're fairly structured in terms of everybody having lunch together.
Yeah. Yeah. We're actually pretty structured for the farm in general, I would say. Everyone shows up. They know right where to go. We don't wait for the team to arrive and then go to work. We just all go right out to our own tasks. At 9 o'clock, we come together and we do a regroup, have coffee, breakfast, and do a 15, 20 minute break there and just talk about our day so far and do we have a good plan going till noon. Then we come together, everybody at noon once again for 45 minutes to an hour. And I feel that that's important because you get fragmented when you don't all come together in one place at one time. So if I were to have two lunch breaks, so to say, you end up having two separate cultures or two separate teams, where when you're all together, I feel that that is important enough that I don't want to go away from it.
It must prevent some tunnel vision where people end up fragmented, but they might end up focusing so much on their task to the exclusion of others. And they start thinking that what they're doing is important rather. So it prevents maybe some of that tunnel vision because everybody realizes what we're doing together.
Absolutely. And we also regroup, so to say, at the end of our lunch. And so it's one of those things that, okay, everyone knows what needs to get accomplished before the day is over. We know who's doing it. And so it helps drive that accountability also amongst the entire team. And it helps us to say, okay, we'll say the gestation team is really got, they got a lot on their plate and the other team doesn't. Okay, maybe can we share resources via people and transfer some people to different departments just to help each other out. So I think that's why that also helps part of that structure. So that's been very important to us.
So other than that foosball table you've got sitting there and the structured breaks that regroup, what else do you do to keep them working together as a team?
So every 6 months we do, it's every 6 months just because that's what's reasonable right now for our outside activities and schedules. But we get together and do a cookout and a family night. So we get together at the local community center. And in this last time we got together, we did a nationality food. And so we did something, bring something that represents you and your hometown. So we did a hometown cookout is what we called it. Okay. And everyone brought a dish that was theirs. And so having people from all over the countryside and some different countries of the world, we had the variety. And so we got to share what means something to us. And it seems like a lot of relationships are built around food. So we got to build on those relationships sure. around a food that represented us. And it was a great talking point of even people of the same country. We had very different views. Yeah. The regions even were different. So
as a foodie, I just would love to do that anyway. Team building.
Oh,
or
I
not.
Loved it. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you do that in-house, there's it takes a little space, takes a little time with the foosball, the team building with the grouping for lunch and breaks, the cookouts or the gatherings. Is there any other things that you would say are key to what you're doing, things that I might not even be thinking to ask about?
I think part of my role is also doing managing our TN program. And so we have TN visas from Mexico working for us. And I do all of their onboarding, but they have more onboarding than the locals because they have the need to get social security cards and driver's license and a bank account and all those things. And it might seem extensive. Sometimes I struggle to be like, is it worth my time to do all of these things one-on-one? But it has been so valuable in the fact that I get to know them on an individual basis, not only in the farm, but personally. And then we get to have check-ins. You know, how are things going for you at the farm? How's your family? How are you adjusting? Is there anything I need to know about? And it always, I always learn something from those, from that one-on-one time that I won't go away from that. So I think that also is valuable. It's just part of our culture, just knowing that they truly can come to me and be open. And not only me, that they'll go to other members on the team too, just ask questions. But I think that just sets the precedent that we truly care about you and we can be your family away from family.
So for those who aren't familiar with the TN visa program, why don't you just give a little background on how that works and how it applies to what you guys are doing? How do you bring in employees through that program?
Yeah, so it all started because we were really struggling to find enough people to come work on a pig farm. Not many people were super excited about that. Also, the unemployment's very low in our area, so it's really difficult to even find people. That's part of why we put, I'm going off a little tangent, but I'll come back to that. That's why we put a lot of emphasis on our culture, because you want to be a place that people are willing to leave their current employer to come work for. And so that would be really why we put a lot of emphasis on our culture and our team itself. But even at that, we're a young farm, so to say. And so until your name and you get that reputation out there, it takes some time. I feel like we're to that point now that I have people reaching out to me like, oh, I heard about you. I hear you're a great place. But it's just something you got to stay on. So the TN visa program allows, it's a professional visa from Mexico and Canada. Haven't found anyone from Canada that wants to come work here yet. So
it'll come.
I mean, hey, I'd welcome it, but
you never know. Someone might reach out to you after this podcast and say,
yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
There you go.
And so it's actually professional visa. So they have to have a 6 years of schooling. They do 4 years at the university and then they do 2 more years doing an emphasis. So it's similar to an animal science degree in the US. But they struggle to find good careers and good paying careers. Either it's in research for the government or they kind of do their own thing. And so because of the lack of pay and need in their home country, they can qualify for a 3-year work visa here in the United States. And so I work with a recruiter who is down in Mexico doing the interviews and doing the actual, like he's actually doing it. Part, like the first interview that I would do similar to in the US. And then I get to complete a second interview with them using a translator. And then from there, we work together and finish all the details with employment through the attorneys and whatever else. But that's depending on how backlogged they are in Mexico will determine how quickly they get here. But usually when I say, yes, I accept this candidate to on my farm, is about 2 months. It's been a little longer, but more recently it's been closer 5 to 6 weeks. And so when they come, they literally come with their backpack or their bags and that's what they got. And so we provide housing for them and a vehicle to drive once they have their license. And we just take them under our wing and can, you know, include them as part of us.
Family back in Mexico or wherever they're from then?
They do. So for the first 6 months, they need to leave their family in Mexico. And then after that, they can bring their family up. It's more on them to find housing and other resources with my assistance. But we will provide housing for single individuals for upfront.
So how many TN visas do you have on staff right now?
We have 8.
8 out of 20.
So yeah.
And it's a 3-year program. Can they renew that and stay on it?
Yes, they can. Yep. Okay.
So it's not a 3 and done.
Correct. But they do need to return to Mexico to complete the renewal. So they'll be here for 3 years. They'll do most of the application here. And then once they have an appointment set up in Mexico, we'll just schedule a vacation and part of their time off. They get to go home for a stretch of days. And then they'll interview also, get their visa, be renewed and turn around and come back.
Do you ever have a problem with them getting renewed?
So far not.
Okay.
No. I have individuals who will complete the 3 years and then they have a friend or a family member who got a job at another farm and they want to go work with them. And I can't, I mean, I don't want to tell them no, right? So sure. I can understand that not everyone's going to continually renew every 3 years, but it would be my desire to, you know, keep a long-term team and recruitment through the TN visa program.
Whether it's with the TN visas or whether it's with other issues, what have you got a sense of what your turnover is over the last 3-4 years now?
Well, I would like to not talk about the first 3 years. It was pretty high. One other thing we implemented as part of our culture was drug testing, and that caused some forced turnover. And once we did that, we do that pre-hire and we do random testing throughout the year. That has just leveled up our culture in general. And whenever I have anything that questions, I just have so many people have come to me and said, I really appreciate that you do that. I've had previous work or, you know, previous employers who said they did and they let it slip and it didn't hold me accountable or it didn't hold anyone else accountable. And there were things going on in that farm or that business that I didn't want to be a part of. So, pre-drug testing, I would say turnover was quite high. And I'll just be honest, that's because, under the influence of drugs, there comes a lot of attendance and family and other issues that generally they had to be fired for. And I was learning part of my hiring. So now that I feel that I've fine-tuned that a lot more, trust me, I'm always learning, but that I've fine-tuned it. We had 4 individuals leave last year on our team. And that was because one gal left for better pay into a whole nother industry. That's fair. It's a competitive market out there. And another gal that got married and is going to have a baby.
Also
a fair reason to leave. And I had another guy who I had hired on temporarily knowing that he was going to leave. He was in sales and needed a job, needed to get his life together in order. That went through and he got a sales opportunity, making way more money than he was pig farming. And it was totally in his wheelhouse. So I was so glad to see him move on and do that. Sure. And the 4th individual, wasn't even someone on the cell farm. So it was someone who I had to fire because of some legal purpose. So I would say we've done quite well and I will continue to do what I can to work that too low.
Other than breaching, you know, culture and breaching your core values, which is an obvious, it's probably a 1-strike policy if I had to guess, or very close to it.
It's close.
Yeah. when else would you just have to admit that someone is not a good fit?
Honestly, it all comes down to those values. And I tell people up front, I said, this is what I hire on. And this is also what I fire on. So if you would like to keep your position on our team, perform to these things. Now I have to do my part as an employer that when I see anything slip, so to say, or anyone who's breaching that, to have that conversation so that they know, because if they don't really know how they're affecting those values, it should be obvious. But if they're not, I have to do my due diligence also and have a conversation.
So yeah, sometimes you can, you know, head it off, correct it, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always just if you see it becoming a potential problem,
you get on it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Before it is a problem.
Is there anything I'm not thinking to ask Kevin? Have you on here as well? So fire away if I'm forgetting something.
No, I would I'd say it's been an interesting listen. I haven't been jumping in a whole pile because it's been a well flowing conversation myself. I'm jotting a few notes going, okay, yeah, I've intended to do that in my own application and find myself slipping the little things, as you say, as far as if it's a little thing that's bothering you, don't necessarily blame the person if you don't have the nerve or the time to go address it, right? If they're not aware that it's something that's going to be a problem, it probably will get worse and you can't just sit on that and stew is an important one for me, right? Because those conversations can sometimes be a challenge to have. And the getting everyone together, again, our industry is a little different. A lot of my employees are scattered around the province on any given day, so we can't necessarily have lunch together. But that is something that I try to make sure at least every couple of weeks whatever else was going on, everyone makes a point of being at the office at the same time that we can sit down and truly have a team meeting before we all get, as Tim said, the tunnel vision, right? That our job is the only important one, and forget that there's other people out there pulling just as hard, and we don't want them pulling in different directions, right? So, no, definitely a good conversation from my perspective. So
there's definitely a lot of takeaway. I've got to ask, Janae, are you, given how far you've come in, since about 2015 when you started learning how to do this, you're probably light years in front of most people who actually do this that I know of, including myself, in terms of managing employees. Do you offer consultations, advice? Are you starting to offer a paid program where you can actually help other teams grow?
Yeah, I would actually love to do that. I'm currently writing a manual for my TN visa program because I learned a lot of things. I got no direction. And so everything that I've learned, it's just been by a lot of mistakes and by, you know, just experience itself. And so I know that's a very popular program within our industry, and I want to help others be successful, and not only within pigs, but even in dairy, especially too. So I'm actually working on like an onboarding manual and just different tips and tricks I've learned as social security offices and things like that. And then, yeah, as part of the culture, whenever I get a chance to visit with people and managers, I just do all that I can, but it just seems that people aren't willing to make that effort. And it is something that you cannot give up on. So someone once told me the analogy that culture is like a rubber band. You want to stretch it as far as you can without snapping. And you know that that is ideal. But the moment you let go, it will resume to its normal state. And so if you don't keep stretching that rubber band and keep working it, your culture will resume to whatever it wants to be, not what you want it to be. And it does take effort. I have a mental note that I need to update someone's review. And so we call it stay interviews. And so, cause I want someone to stay online with me. It's not reviewing necessarily your job and your role. It's part of it, but it's supposed to be a two-way street with conversation. And so I just had to make a mental note today. Like, I got to meet with this person on Friday because they've come to 90 days and I've just noticed a few things in their attitude and their approach to work. I got to keep them engaged.
Sure. Okay.
I could choose to dismiss that.
But then
I could also lose an employee.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that either.
Sure. Oh, cool. So you do offer, or you will offer, if somebody was interested, there is avenues. And certainly if somebody was interested in learning more, reach out to us at New Standard. We can certainly put you in contact with Janae. I think this would be a good point to wrap it up then. Really want to thank you, Janae, for this time. It's been terribly informative, and I've learned a lot, and probably have learned that I have more to learn than I realized. So it's been very good, and I really want to appreciate thank you for the time. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's you're always learning, and I myself am too. So I keep pushing myself to learn more through resources and whatever else I can do. And so, yeah, if anyone else has tips and tricks, like, by all means, I love visiting and
sure.
And learning too. Well,
that's awesome. We'll certainly put this out there. If somebody does want any advice or help or even consultation, reach out to us and we'll get you in touch. And thanks for listening.
These days, a lot of things don't make sense, like gluten-free non-GMO water or raising pigs, but not eating pork. But NEDAP has three solutions for your farm that make sense. From farrowing to finish, NEDAP ProSense collects real-time 24/7 data on weight, feed intake, and calculates feed conversion ratios for you. NEDAP SowSense minimizes feed waste, maximizes sow performance, and saves labor for improved ROI. NEDAP PorkSense automatically sorts finishing hogs by weight, saving you feed and ensuring consistent market weights turn after turn for improved profits. Talk with your New Standard representative today to see which NEDAP solutions make the most sense for your farm.